오늘 아침 우리는 한국에 대해서 강연을 듣겠습니다. You're welcome. We need to all these things up and see what we can come up with. Do you all have the outline? Or you don't? As Professor Shueta insisted that I speak in Korean, however, I think you will not understand it too well if I speak in Korean, since you're still in the stage of learning Korean, I'm sure. So a few years later, maybe you can attempt it, but now perhaps I better speak in English, and two portions maybe I speak in Korean. But then you notice we have first-hand geography. Under geography, I would like to mention all this very briefly. Location is somewhere between Japan, China, Russia, and we even had the critics. Location is somewhere in between, as I mentioned, the far eastern part of Korea. It looks like this is going to be one big fun. Korea is located far eastern portion of Asian continent. To the north, we have Manchuria, and to the west, we have China, and to the east, we have Japan, to the south, we have Taiwan, what is called Formosa, and then other Polynesian islands. So that is about rough location of Korea. As you can see, that why we are influenced by Russia too, that is Russia connected to the a little bit of northern Korea. It's divided into half by 38 parallel. It's no longer that way since the Korean War. We will talk about it a little more. As you see, the map looks something like Florida. Shape of it is has we used to depict it as a rabbit having ears, and this is a mouth, and that's a tail. So that's about the way it looks. The climate is something similar to St. Louis, although it's not as humid as St. Louis, perhaps. We have four distinct seasons: spring, summer, and then beautiful autumn, and then cold winter. Topography, as such, is very hilly, mountainous, and we have some arable land, although we would like to have some more, but we don't. South has much more of a cultivatable land than the north. North has mountains, more hills, and north is very rich in resources, minerals, and also electric power. South is predominantly agricultural, although many cities also have industry. Let's leave it at that and go to history. The origin of Korean history is not recorded until some, I guess, 2,000 years later after we claim our origin had begun. The legend goes that Tangun was one of the originator of Korea, and he started the country from the Mount Paektu, like located right on like the northern tip of Korea, from where the Yalu River flows down this way. Since then, we have some 4,300 years of history. Much of the history is recorded, however, so that we are fairly certain that at least there were some 2,000 years, over 2,000 years of written history of our records. We had many dynasties, but among the known ones were Koguryo dynasty, and then it was divided into three states. After that, Koryo country unified it. When Koryo unified it, that was the name that was beginning to be known to the world, and from which we derive the name Korea. So that is the name Korea. After that, the Li dynasty came in. That was the last dynasty up to about 60 years ago. And after that, Japanese occupation came. And now, at the Second World War, we have our Republic of Korea, and also Northern Korea, which has become communistic. Korean War began 1950. You know, the idealism in the North and in the South was different due to the fact that when the Second World War was ended, at the UN they decided that the North Korea should be governed by, or helped rather, by Russia, and the South Korea should be aided by America. And on account of that, each learned a different idealism, ideology, so that ever since we had this tension between North and South, that was 1945 when it first began. And 1950, only 5 years later, we had this tragic war, North invading the South first. After that, we had all kinds of back and forth strategy here. Sometimes we were almost entirely pushed down to the southern corner of Korea, and then we pushed up again, and some army even went up to the Yalu River, but then pushed down again. And while it was fighting then, we came to a point which was somewhat below 38 parallel, and then to the western portion of Korea. Eastern portion of Korea went from the northern part of 38 parallel. At that point, truce was held, truce conference. It was 1953, so that war stopped at that point. However, this is not to say that we have permanently war ended, because at border, they're all facing each other with all kinds of machine guns and cannons and whatnot, and I wouldn't be surprised if there would be all kinds of atomic weapons placed out there now. So that is the Korean War and its situation, and we are still divided, North communistic, South democracy, and by the way, I come from South. So, don't worry about my propaganda. Then, Korea today has also much of a political upheaval, and we have experienced a great deal of tragedy. First, you are acquainted with Syngman Rhee's government. And when Syngman Rhee's government was thrown away by a student movement, a revolt against dictatorship, then Chung Min's cabinet came in, and that wasn't very successful because it was too lenient, they said, and many things were left undone, and corruption set in much worse. So then, recent military junta began, and this junta was directed by Park, General Park, and he took over, and it was strict dictatorship. And some people argue whether this was right or wrong and so forth. Some people say, but we needed it. Well, I don't want to comment on this because purpose is not politics here. Anyway, they promised to give this government away within 2 years. 2 years now passed since May. So we were supposed to have a free election of the civilian government. However, now they are debating whether this would be advisable at this time because still much corruption in the country. And when the political parties were reestablished, there were more than 5-6 parties, and they were all struggling for powers, and they thought this was not very appropriate time to hand over the power. And there might be another danger of military junta arriving. However, civilians are definitely against this, so that over against the military government request that they should hold another 4 years, they are now still objecting to this, and they want government handed over to civilian rule. That is the situation in Korea today. And with that, we'll leave the history of Korea and move into the people, and we can spend a little more time in this subject. Characteristic of Korean race and the population. Before the Second World War was ended, we were told that Korea had something like 30 million population, or a little better. But then, when Korea was divided, communication between North and South sort of ceased. So so that we didn't know exactly what would be the population of total Korea. Since the Korean War, they made several census, and later on we learned that the South Korea alone has something like 26 million population. That's quite a bit. By this, are we to say that the North has only 4 million? Because it was 30 million. Now, this is not a very likely figure. Most likely, North has more. So we can sort of assume that although many people during the Korean War came down to South as refugees, nevertheless, if we account for something like 4 million for that, we still have, should have, somewhere around 15 million or better in North Korea that will put together make something like 40 million or better. As far as our race is concerned, anthropologists argue back and forth where we originate and who we are and so forth. Now, you have a good example of us, and you don't know how we look like. Koreans look like me and Young out there. So he doesn't think so, but he is Korean, so don't worry. In general, you can see a certain amount of characteristic trait in us that is similar to a Chinese or a Japanese. However, there is some distinction, and to tell this is very typical. However, we somehow instinctively seem to know at the street or somewhere where we meet, although there were many times when I thought in Chicago, for instance, I go around and I thought that guy was Korean, so I go to him and speak to him Korean, and he'd look at me with a funny look, you know, and I guess that he was not Korean then. So we have no definite record of where we come from, although we are in general classified as a yellow race, which I don't know what it indicates, but maybe originated around Mongolia. And there are a certain amount of Western mixture too. For instance, in Japan they have what they call Ainu people, which are white people in a way, much hair on their chest and all this. And somehow there might have been some sort of mixture. Now, Chinese people are in general pretty tall people, I think. Japanese people are fairly short. They are known as shorter people. Korean people, I think, is in between. We follow the rule of moderation. If you don't believe it, you come to Korean and empirically have the proof. Language is a very intriguing factor, because I believe that language does not only reveal the difference in the vocabulary, but it also reveals the way of thinking. Man speaks what he thinks. Therefore, this is one important phase of any cultural anthropologist study, and I think it may be well to dwell a little consideration in this area. Our language is called the Hangul, that's the official language of Korea today, although we use many Chinese text and other things. Hangul has 24 characters, which is actually the alphabet. They have something, 14 consonants, which is something like this. That's like a G, that's N, C, R, M, C, F. This figure, by the way, is, has no sound quality, but I will explain this later. And it also sometimes is used at the end of the syllable and acts as English NG. This is almost like a G in English. And that's CH, like a church sound. That's K. That's 14 consonants in Korea. So it will, if I read it quickly, it will sound like this. Now, we have 10 vowels was taught something like this. If you have one sticking out on the right, that is R. In English, it may be said A, temporarily. If you have two, that's Ya. If you have one to the left, it's Earth. If you have two, that's Ya. If you have one on top, like so, then it's O. If you have two on top, that's, can you guess what it would be like?
Yeah.
Yo. Mm-hmm. And if you had one down like so, that's U. What about if you had two down? U. Yeah, that is a good pupil. I like that. He's a Korean scholar out there. And if you had one with nothing on it, what would it be? It's just nothing. You know, like maybe in a Hebrew book or Shua or something like that. There's one down like so, and it's sound like E, a short I in English. So these are 10 vowels, A, Ya, E, Yo, O, Yo, U, Yu, U, E. With this, we make all kinds of combinations. For instance, my name Moon will be, there's the M sound right here. Get that, and then U is right here. So I put the U below that thing, and then I need an N, consonant N. Here's the consonant N here. So I put that below that there, and that's my name Moon. So that's the way we compose. And then these two syllables, maybe two, three syllables, or even one syllable sometimes makes up the word. And then each word has a little space so that you can tell where the word ends. And that's the way our language is composed. Now this was originally designed some 500 years ago by one of the king in Korea and his men. When this was first invented, this was designed for the lower class people because they thought that only rich people or nobility class could afford to study in schools in a Chinese letters and so forth, because it was so complicated and took such a long time to learn. But in common people, laboring class, just simply didn't have much time to do all that study. Therefore, this was simplified version how to communicate to our people. So that this was oftentimes rejected as being a vulgar language, a vulgar letter in the system, because it was too easy. And so it was kind of a strange thing that it was rejected for many, many centuries. And even in high schools in Korea today, they still teach Chinese character. And common people use them in society anywhere else. And they are campaigning very hard to put this system through, because this is one of the most scientific language, written language system we have, I think, because ours are strictly phonetic. For instance, this sound has only that sound quality. It has no other sound quality. But in English, for instance, G has all kinds of sound quality. Now this for us is like a go, but in English it can have a z sound too, doesn't it? Like a general. The g is not a general, but it's a general. So that the English alphabet system does not strictly coincide with a phonetic system, but it varies depending upon circumstance. Even vowels are even worse in English. For instance, if you say a man, that a has sound quality of a short A, right? A. But if you put that in the front of, when I say angel, it's not angel, but it's angel. However, Los Angeles is it's Angeles, yeah? It's different again. Or if you say small, that is not small or snail, but it's a small. It's almost all quality is there. If you say America, it has different quality again. It's not America or America or A-America, but it's America. So what I'm pointing out is that Korean system has no such exception. It always strictly complies to its sound value designated to it. And within these 24, we can operate fairly well and accurately. Now, I would like to see the relationship between Korean language and our surrounding culture. For instance, Chinese language is known as picture language. By that, perhaps you're not acquainted with some of the figures in Chinese language. Let me give you an example. This is letter of mountain. This derives from mountain looking like this, you know, having peaks. That looks like mountain, doesn't it? And then, for instance, tree has stems and branches and roots. From here they derive letter like this, and now the letter tree is like so. So this is picture language that they have in China. Now Chinese language, if you notice, has no tense. They say, I went to school yesterday, then they will say, I go to school yesterday. See? And since there's yesterday, which already has a past element in it, they can get by with it. And actually, I don't see no reason why not. See? So they have no tense. Their sentence order is not quite like a Korean, but it's, I think, perhaps closer to the Western. Where you mention subject and then a verb and then object and things like that. See? Whereas in Korea we mention object first and then verb, you see. So in that respect, Chinese language is closer to Westerners. Japanese language is semi-phonetic language. They have 51 symbols, each one representing a syllable rather than alphabet with a consonant involved. So they go something like I, U, E, O, Gagi, Fuge, Go, and so forth, see? And with that they operate. However, they are very much limited because they have only so many sounds they can make within the 51 syllables they have. So you will hear Japanese speaking English is much more handicapped than perhaps Koreans would have been. Japanese grammar is very similar to Korean grammar because we have about identical setup, so that if you know the Japanese vocabulary, then you can speak Japanese. And this is the fact. So I think perhaps there were closer affinities between Japan and Korea than between China and Korea. So much for the interrelationship of the language, but then perhaps I better also make some comparison between Western language and Oriental language. Especially Korean. Western language is entirely of the different stream. Yours are very inductive and ours are very deductive. By that I mean to say, you mention the conclusion first and then explain, and this is a tendency. If you were to say, I am going to the class, then in Korea we will say, I to the class going in. The verb always comes at the end. Now what you are doing is you mentioned the verb, which is the concluding remark first, and then you will explain where you are going. And if you had to say a compound sentence, such as, I'm going to the class because I have a history at this hour, or something like that, at 10 o'clock, then in Korea we would say, I, history at 10 o'clock, have, because, by the way, comes at end too, I, to the class 1 a.m. this morning, perhaps it would come first. Now, if you analyze this, you will find that you are saying, I'm going. Then I ask that independent thought itself, which can stand alone. But I ask, where are you going? Then you say, to the class. I say, why? Then you say, because. When? 10 o'clock. So on, see? So you keep explaining it, whereas we explain first and then give the conclusion, and maybe by that time you have no more questions to ask either. So I see, basically, there is a certain amount of induction and deduction involved here. And our logical thinking is much like that. For instance, I find myself sometimes very difficult to take some of the tests they give here, because it's much oriented towards deductive thinking, whereas ours, even the learning process is orientated towards inductive thinking. For instance, in a philosophy test, I noticed, there's matching test, right? this idea, where does it belong to? Does it belong to logical empiricism, or does it belong to existentialism and so forth, see? Now, I rather Fox to give me a word and explain about existentialism. Then I can go about and talk about it for miles, see? But if somebody asks me about one little point in existentialism and say, where does it belong? Then we're going backwards, you see. And I say, oh, let's see, let me think. And I try to think all kinds of things, and I'm getting confused. See, this is what I mean, inductive and deductive. Well, I didn't quite mean to say that, I don't think. Now, for instance, let me give you a good example of this induction and deduction. When you write a letter, for instance, how do you address? This is a very common Western characteristic. You will say, Mr. Sandman, and then your address, right? What's your address? 4418. What is it? All right. And the account? Oh, same way. Results, right? Now, if I mail this in Korea, most Korean people are trying to read from up, you know, from up to down, and I think English people are trained that way too. So we will read Mr. Sandman first. And how do you expect Korean postman to know where Mr. Sandman is? You know, that's really illogical. What about 4418? This wouldn't make much difference either. You know, because there are many, many houses, I'm sure, by the number 4418. What about this street? Doesn't make any sense. St. Louis? There are other St. Louis than St. Louis, Missouri here too. By the time he reads Missouri, he might know where this goes to, see? And maybe he might even have to read the USA. See, after all that trouble, all you have to do is drop that mail into U.S. mail, you know, into that bag. When it comes to San Francisco Press, same thing happens all over. What we are doing now then is to reverse this completely, and we will start from USA, and then Missouri, and then street, house number, and then Mr. Sandman, you see. So this is more logical, isn't it? Because when it comes to U.S., then all they have to see is the next line, Missouri, and then at Missouri, they will read the street, and so finally it reaches the person. Who in the world does a postman care which person it gets, you know? In other words, he will just drop into the house, and then at house, they will distribute to whom it goes. So what you are doing is jumping into conclusion first. A person to whom letter is finally reaching and goes no further. It's the concluding point. That point you mention first, and then you mention the next narrowest possible point, that is house number, and then a house at the street, and then a city, and the state, so on. But what we are doing is we will confine from broader to the wide, and we say, well, in the U.S., into the St. Louis, and city of this, and then street, and this house to this person. And finally, we give the conclusion, right? So this too is what I meant by inductive approach. Although this is a very crude way of saying it, but this prevails throughout our way of thinking, I think. And therefore, I think this is something important we should note. First, I wonder, this isn't the thing that also reveals in your pragmatic way of life. Whereas in us, for us, it is more a traditional type, beat around the bushes so long, you know, and before you make any conclusion, perhaps. I would like to then speak about the family structure. Korean family is very rigid family still, I think. Some families have 3-4 generations living together. In America, you seldom find that kind of trait anymore. Our marriage pattern used to be that the parents had quite a bit of say-so, and I don't doubt that they still do. Even marriages were prearranged sometimes. this pattern is quickly going away nowadays, especially in big cities. Years ago, perhaps a boy never knew whom he was marrying until 2 days or a few months before they were married. But this kind of thing never happens. But today, at that time, I also sometimes wondered how they got along so well, even if they didn't know each other very well, if you discuss this matter, you know, that they always got along. Is this because they knew no better and they knew no other girls? So that whom he met was the one and the only, so that they got along well. And what else is it because parents were very careful in selecting their mates? On the other hand, in America, you have a free choice. You have all the choice in the world, so that you have many states and all this kind of thing that determines your choice. Nevertheless, many people are not happy after they got married. And what causes this, too, is something we have to think about. Is it because you have tasted too many so that by the time you end up with one, you are not still satisfied and you still think that there might be a better one yet? Or is it because you're emotionally overruled at the time of courtship? So, I'm just talking this question out. Yes, talk loud. As far as our custom is concerned, I cannot mention too many of them, but let me just give you a few basic ones. We are very strongly orientated toward the niceties of life, respect for the elders. This kind of thing is something very important for us. Regard for the others, much more so than any other nations. We are sometimes called this Japanese Korean word, Dongbang Yeji-guk, which means one of the most ethical nations in the Orient. I don't know whether we deserve this title or not, but let me just give you an example. When I first came to a school, Quentin St. John's College, there I was always conscious of my roommate, and whenever I do something, then I always felt that he should have something to do with it too. And if I had some candy, for instance, I will offer to him all the time and say, "Do you want this candy?" And if he say he wants it, then I give him, even if it's last piece. And then later on, when he gets a big cookie jar from home or something. And he just sits down and kick one out and eat, and then never even asked me. And I was terribly offended. Now this, to American mind, is nothing to be really offended, right? If some guy eats cookies in the room, well, why should you be offended? But I was so terribly offended because I regarded him as my roommate, and I offered him even my last piece of candy. And here, this guy gets a big box of cookies and don't even offer me, you see. Later on, I come to think, well, now why am I offended? He eats his cookie with his own mouth. And if I want one, why don't I go out and get one too? And also, a lot of times, if I really want one, then I go and ask him, Johnny, could I have one? He says, oh yeah, go ahead, take it as many as you want. See? But in other words, he just didn't think that far to offer me, but he didn't really mind either. So this is the sort of indifference that prevails in America, which for us is more consciously exercised. And not all the time with a willing heart either. This is not to say that Korean people are always willing to give everything they have. This is also revealed in giving and receiving. For instance, if I give you something, it is your sort of a custom for you to say no and refuse it. Or something like that. You refuse. I wonder whether this isn't because it is custom to offer to everybody too, you see. When you have something, it is a nice thing and ethical thing for you to offer to everybody. Even if you don't want to give, still you have a certain amount of moral responsibility to offer to the poor and to your neighbor. So that the other party which is offered has to take this into consideration. And if he's offered something, he will say no to give him chance so that he can have some chance to keep these things, you see. So that he would say, no, no. Well, I experienced this too, personally, during the war, for instance, when I worked for one of the American chaplains. Sometimes he'd give me something, see, and said, take it. And out of a modest Korean ethics, I would say, no. Then he will not give me any more either. So I sometimes said, well, I really want it, but I hope he will offer me again, you see, but he doesn't a lot of times. So there's a difference there. You may wonder then, does Korean people, do Korean people ever get anything? Well, they do get something once in a while. Because if the other party really wants to give, then he will really insist many times, more than once. See? And that way, we get things too. Likewise, when you give things, I notice here in America, you enumerate something about the thing you give. You say, well, this is a watch I picked it up in Switzerland, and I think this is a wonderful watch I'd like to give you because of my appreciation for what you have done for me, and so on. See? But for us, we a lot of times degrade the things which we give and say, well, this is no good, but I would like to give it to you, see? Or this is just a really humble thing, so forth. And if I keep giving you bad things, you might dislike me too, you know. Once in a while, you might want me to give you some good things. But there we say so because we have attitude of respect for the other party. This thing which I give you now is maybe inferior to what you may deserve or what you might have. Nevertheless, out of humble gratitude, I will give this to you. And this is our idea of degrading the things which we give. Now here too, what I want you to note is not the fact, but why do we say things like that? And why do we have to go extra way out to go into such a incongruence in a way of saying things and giving things and actions? Because this is a social custom, and such a custom do not just die away in a matter of years. We are very stubborn people, by the way, much more stubborn than German people, I think. One interesting fact, as far as our social life is concerned too, perhaps, is our calendar system too. This is based on moon. We still use this calendar, especially if you go to countryside. This is a lunar calendar. It's not the lunatic, I'm sure. It has 28 days to a month. And the reason why it has 28 days is because moon cycle is 28 days, usually 28 or 29 days. The concept of time is something very intriguing, isn't it? I oftentimes thought about it. Now, just exactly how do they mark the time, you know? Year is made because spring and summer, autumn and winter comes, and then next spring occurs again. Reoccurrence of the spring and the same thing over and over again marks the time, and we call it a year. A day is marked by dark night and then bright day again and then dark night, so that it is called one day. But then what about a month? How is it marked, you know? Although in Western world we have 30 or 31 day system, which is marked by scientific way by dividing, you know, years into so many days and then dividing up into so many months. Nevertheless, I wouldn't doubt that original instinct was also to see certain pattern of reoccurrence. And this reoccurrence for us was the moon. Moon as reoccurring, waning and waxing. Whenever moon waned completely, that was the first of each month. And when the moon was full moon, that was 15th, and as it waxes. And then it waned again to be completely disappearing again. And this was the demarcation of a month. So that this perhaps is more original way of marking the date than our month system in Western culture. In this custom, usually you find that our month is about a month later than yours. Yours is May now. For us, it's April yet in Korea, so it can be really April Fool's. There's an interesting custom connected with this dating system, that is, for instance, when a child is born, that child is already 1 year old, although he has not lived in this world 1 year old, see? The day he was born, he is 1 year old. Now you would ask, why so? I have never heard of the official explanation, but if I may conjecture my own opinion, I think it is very scientific, because anything that exists must take age, right? Even a bug takes age. If it is 1 day old, it is 1 day old from the day he existed. And you all know very well that baby existed long time before he was born. So then, say 9, 10 months, why don't we give him some age, you know? So when he's born, give him some age. 1 year old is good enough. You might object and say, well, it's not quite 1 year, but then if we cheated him a couple of months, what about you? And you're cheating 10 months out of him. So I think our way is perhaps more scientific. So we give him 1 year of age when he's born. Another thing is we are taking age not on birthdays so much as on January the 1st, which is the New Year's Day. This too is a strange custom. We have two sets of age. One is called full age, and the other one is called regular age. And regular age is most popularly identified age. Now, because of these two factors, January the 1st being the day where everybody takes age and everybody gets 1 year older, and then also the day we are born, we are already 1 year old. Therefore, things like this happen. If a baby is born something like a Christ, 26th of December, that day he is 1 year old, and maybe 6 days later when January the 1st comes, he is 2 years old, and this is very common. Well, let's leave it at that, and we'll skip this education because we don't have time. Let me just briefly state about the thoughts and religion. Animism still prevails much in Korea. You'll see worship of the rocks and trees and mountains. If you go to countryside, you'll find all kinds of things like that. This is very most ancient form of religious thought, I suppose. There's much of shamanism, sometimes called the Mudang or Jamjangi or even a Saju, which is a man who tries to decide which girl and which boy is good combination and which is not, and so forth. How many minutes do we have here? We have a Buddhism as an established form of religion. By this time, you all took this course in history of religion, so I don't have to enumerate this. We have Confucianism, typically expressed in the form of ancestral worship. They have altar service, altar, family altar service, once a year on the day their parents die. They bring their sacrifice and bow before it, and they feel that they receive blessing from their ancestors by giving the feast to the ancestors. This is always carried on about midnight, or shortly after midnight. So I remember as a kid, I often had to get up from this, sound sleep and then have to bow before this altar. We have Christianity in Korea. The history is something like 150 years old, although we cannot hardly say that that was a solid establishment of Christian church in such an early date. The concentrated work was much later. I have a little chart here about the distribution of the Korean religious affiliation. Protestants compose something like 2.8%, Catholics 2.2%, Buddhism 2.6%, and then Confucianism 2%, because I couldn't collect definite data on that, but 2% plus, I suppose. Tongdo is one of the large, latest sectarian groups, which is about 1.1%, and others are also have little things, 1%. The rest of the 88.3% is non-religious people. However, most of these people will claim, too, that they will belong to either Buddhism or something like that by saying, well, I go to Buddhist temple once a year, or whatever they might want to identify themselves with. Here you see a numbers of churches. You can notice how a Protestant church although percentage-wise is only a little more than Roman Catholicism, has many more members. Turkey, 6,700 over against about 1,000 of Roman Catholic Church, and other churches also in relationship to it. I would like to talk about the difficulty of Christian church work. The difficulty being that Korean people are basically superstitious people, animistic and polytheistic. Therefore, they believe in God, and they will believe in many gods. If Christians will give me blessings, maybe I'll come. If Buddha gives blessings, I go to Buddha too. So that they are willing to go to all these different places, and they do not want to be compounded into one religion. Christianity is such an exclusive religion, while it is such an inclusive religion. Christianity says you can come to our church, but then you cannot believe anything else, right? Although we say that Christianity is for all men. And because of this, we have difficulty in evangelizing people. However, we have advantage too. We are not crass materialists, as Russia or other countries might claim to be, that we at least have a little more susceptibility toward such matter as religious thinking. And many people also by nature are superstitious, therefore there is material to work with. So I'm sure missionaries made use of all these aspects. Christianity in Korea is about 5%. Compared to the Far Eastern countries, we are far better off. Whereas Japan has less than 0.1% or something like that. Well, China much less. Korea has 5%, and I think that's something to be noted. Someone mentioned in a Christian Century that it wouldn't be surprising to see Korea one of the first totally Christianized countries in the Orient. And Korean Christians really worked hard, and they are very serious Christians. In America, I have seen many, many what they call Sunday school Christians. But in Korea, if a person is Christian, they almost have 100% attendance of the church. And this you can count on. I think because they are persecuted, and Christianity does not offer such a fantastic economic welfare or any other status, so that when they come to church, it's only because they wanted to come to church. There's no other things connected with it. And their early missionaries certainly worked hard with a great deal of piety and work. They even had what they call a 1 million soul movement, whereby everyone tried to bring another person as they were baptized and tried to build up membership to 1 million people. And things like that is a living witness of Christian church in Korea. Lutheranism in Korea began only 5 years ago when three missionaries were first sent. And now we have five working members there, and our work is expanding now. Since we don't have time, maybe we better quit yet.